tube stays in the tube. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're all about cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. My name is Zach Brooks, and I'm joined by...
Brendan Fitzpatrick. Hold on, Zach. I need to put my Star Wars figures away. You caught me at an awkward moment here under my podcasting table. All right, I'm ready now.
Oh, now you've just revealed to everybody that I'm around. Thank you for saying my name so loudly. Yes, and we are joined by a special guest. This week we have a guest. It is first time on the Movie Ladder Podcast. Welcome, Grace Leader.
Grace, what's up?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so excited. This is fun. Yeah, it's going to be great. It's like I'm visiting Cape Cod for the summer. Just going to come pop in, and I'll head back. Yes. It's great.
I was going to say, do you have a vacation home that you're planning to go to in the next couple months?
I'm actually on vacation this week. I took some Easter vacation, tacked it on to the end of Easter Monday, but I don't have a vacation home, and I don't think I'm going on vacation somewhere nice anytime soon. So
yes, not as nice as this. This week on the Movie Ladder Podcast, we are talking about The Way, Way Back, not to be confused with the movie we did last week, which is The Way Back. So the connection is the title. So there, and we'll probably find some other connections along the way. So we'll be discussing The Way, Way Back, and then at the end of the episode, we will pick a movie connection based on suggestions sent in from the listeners and ones that we brought as your hosts. We will be talking in full spoiler detail about The Way, Way Back. So if you haven't yet watched it, we will put a timestamp so you can jump ahead if you want to hear what we're going to be watching next week. But of course, you should pause the podcast and go watch it. I didn't find it streaming anywhere for free. I don't know if any of you did.
Yeah, in Canada, it's on Disney Plus, the Stars.
Awesome.
The Stars add-on, yeah.
Wait, there's a Stars add-on for Disney Plus in Canada?
I think that's like a UK-Canada thing. Like Disney Plus, like it was worth it, and then they added all this stuff, and it's amazing. So.
Man, yeah, so everybody should move to Canada.
Yeah, definitely moving to Canada.
Yeah. So if you're Canada, it's on Disney Plus. If you're in America, you got to shell out the $4 to Amazon to rent it, or visit your local library like I did, and you can get the Blu-ray for free.
There you go.
Your tax dollars, but pretty much free. And as always, once we do pick our movie for next week, send in your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Letterboxd, themovieladder@gmail.com. Where you can send Brendan some spam, make him read it. So make sure you do that. All right.
Always love getting that spam.
Grace, tell people who you are.
My name is Grace. I live in Toronto. I'm a trans woman. Use she, her pronouns. I do some boring healthcare education stuff for my work. I love TV. I would say that movies are actually like a pretty big like blind spot for me for the most part. Like in my pop culture, it's like there's a lot of movies that I feel like I've never seen. I've been much more of a TV watcher. But when I started listening to the Movie Ladder podcast, I love the idea of like using it as a means to like watch more movies. And especially movies that like you wouldn't otherwise probably like pick out. Like I probably would have never watched The Way Back, the movie you watched last week if it didn't come up. Or like I'm thinking of a movie like Shampoo that you did last season that was like so fun to then like listen to dive deeper into. So we do. I host a podcast called Hold Up where we look at specifically like LGBTQ media from the past to see if it holds up in like a 2021 context. We've done a few movies, mostly episodes of TV, but yeah, excited to talk about The Way, Way Back today.
Yes. Awesome. Did you, to plug the bonus podcast that we did last week, have you watched It's a Sin? And I know it's not old media, but did you guys talk about that on your podcast?
I have watched It's a Sin. We haven't talked about it yet. The thing is typically we look for media that's like, I mean, we've done some stuff that's like 4 or 5 years old. We certainly could because it's like looking at like what culture was like in the early 80s. But It's a Sin is very, very good. It's very sad, but it's very good.
What about there was a Friday the 13th, or not Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. I think it's the second one that Kyle, our guest for the It's a Sin podcast, said like this movie is all about gay panic, basically.
Oh, great. Well, that's great. That's like I love the out of the box suggestions of like stuff that's like not explicitly gay, but like, you know.
Have you seen that movie?
No, I've never seen it. No.
Oh, my God. All right. So you need to watch that. And then when you do a podcast on it, I will connect you with Kyle, who was on our podcast last week, because that would be like that is the match made in heaven for a podcast.
Great. Okay, right. Amazing.
Good. Cool. Well, yeah, we're really excited to have you.
Yeah, Grace actually slid in my DMs. Nice. I guess it was the end of last year, beginning of this year, and said, really enjoying the podcast. And I said, that's awesome. I would love to have you on. And I'm so glad we finally were able to get Grace on today.
Cool. And yeah, glad that we've given you a reason to watch like some random movies. Like yeah. Shampoo was a great, one of my favorite episodes to record. We had a lot of fun with that. So
yeah,
that's the whole point of this podcast, is just to watch some random movie and have a reason to watch it. So give ourselves some kind of challenge. I will say for me next week, my connections are quite a challenge. I do not have very many written down. And a lot of them are movies that I have already seen. So I'm hoping that you guys can pull some weight on the connections side this week. So
we'll see what we can do. We'll find out.
All right. Well, Grace, why don't you kick us off? What is the best thing you watched this week?
Well, not this week. I didn't finish it, but like I've been watching, basically thanks to Brendan, I watched all of the Clone Wars in like,
awesome,
basically like a month and a bit, knowing that there was going to be a post show recaps podcast about it. So I was like, let me just dive into that. So that's where most of my brain, has been focused. I've been doing a Dark rewatch podcast. That's a very fun show. Digesting Dark.
You're crossing into my territory there.
It's been so fun to rewatch. It's incredible to see like how much there is like in the first episode that they drop they drop in there. It's really fun. And then mostly a lot of reality TV. There's a lot of reality TV on right now. The Challenge, Big Brother Canada, RuPaul's Drag Race, Top Chef just came back. So I'm all over the place. But that's
what I was gonna say. Watching. There's no lack of content in your life. It seems like, for sure. Yeah, if you watch Tribes of Europa, which is the new Netflix show by the people who made Dark.
Oh, no, I have to do, okay. I'm on vacation this week, as I said.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. So, Kyle watched it, and he liked it. My brother watched it, I think, as well. But I've been meaning to get to it. It's just, for me, there is so much content and just not enough hours in the day.
Right, for sure.
All right, how about you, Brendan?
Yeah, so I watched a few things this week. As Grace said, Top Chef came back this week, last Thursday after we recorded. Really nice to have Top Chef back in my life. Really looking forward to this season. It's a really unique season because they basically created a bubble in Portland and flew all the contestants and judges out there, quarantined them all, and filmed the whole thing over the course of a couple of months. So they certainly seem to be one TV show that doesn't have a problem filming a season during a pandemic. it's really great to have Top Chef back in my life. But other than that, so for Criterion this week, I watched Easy Rider, the 1969 film directed by Dennis Hopper, starring Dennis Hopper, Peter Fonda, and Jack Nicholson. I really, really enjoyed it, especially the soundtrack. The soundtrack is amazing. If you've never seen Easy Rider, it's basically about these two guys that decide to go on a cross-country motorcycle trip to sell some drugs from L.A. to New Orleans, and all sorts of cross-country shenanigans ensue. It's a really fun buddy movie. It's a really fun road trip movie. I probably actually could have recommended it as a sort of road trip vacation movie this week if I hadn't just watched it. The connection would be really thin, but I possibly could have. I really enjoyed Easy Rider. If you've never seen it, definitely check it out. And that's about it. Those are the best two things I watched this week.
All right. Well, for me, so I watched actually quite a few things this week. I've also been diving into a little bit more TV. But I've got to say, the best thing I watched, it was a movie that came up as a connection off our Spartacus episode, because it is by Stanley Kubrick, and it does star Kirk Douglas, but it was the movie that came out before Spartacus, and that is Paths of Glory, and I was blown away by this movie. I mean, I think Kubrick in general has not had a miss that I've seen. I mean, I guess that's not really a hot take to say like Stanley Kubrick makes great movies, but it's just one of those where it's like, yeah, it's just, I mean, this, he was his first movie. It is from 1957, so it's a war movie from before Vietnam. So I was like, what is it really going to have to say about war that's like interesting and new? He made it when he was 28, and I was like, well, come on. What could he have done at 28? Nope. Yeah, he was a genius at 28 and made a really great movie about World War One. Reminded me a lot, at least the first half of, because it is kind of separated into two halves, although not structurally, but it does kind of split into two halves. The first half reminded me a lot of 1917. Mm-hmm. And kind of the way it's structured is similar to Full Metal Jacket, where except it's one overall story. It's just very distinctly split. And I don't want to say too much else because I didn't know that going in. And it was nice to the way the twist that this movie took was very surprising to me. So I know, Brennan, that's one of your favorites.
Yeah, it's probably up there in my top three favorite Kubrick movies. I think I've probably said this on the past. I took a Kubrick class in college, and this was one of the films that our instructor showed us. I absolutely adore Paths of Glory. It's really powerful, really great powerhouse performance from Kirk Douglas. I'm really glad you got around to watching it, because I was really hoping we would pick it after Spartacus, but I understand, you know, why we didn't. But yeah, I'm really glad. I'm really glad you knocked that one off of your old school movie blind spot list.
Yeah, one of my big blind spots for sure. Grace, have you seen Paths of Glory?
No, but it makes me feel really good that you're like, what could you possibly accomplish at like 28? I'm 29. That's like great. That's great news.
Oh,
that you, like, you can't accomplish stuff before you're like 30. That's great.
Yeah, Brendan and our friend Mac and I have a group chat. And after I watch it, I saw that Kubrick made this at 28. I'm like, what the hell have we done with our lives? I'm like, he made this movie and we're, you know, like almost 10. I'm almost 10 years older than that.
No, he's like an incredible genius. Like, and I don't need to live up to Stanley. I'm not like, you know, comparing myself to Stanley Kubrick, you know.
Yeah.
So it's great news. This is great news today. This is great.
Right. Yeah, when I was 28, I was living in New York City working at a temp agency while doing C-list theater design and stage management work. So, you know, we all live our dreams in our own ways. Some people get to make Hollywood blockbusters and some people get to be starving artists in New York.
Yeah. I will just say like how ahead of its time this movie was. Like, it was made shortly after, I mean, like just like 10 years, 15 years after World War II ended. Less than 15 years after World War II ended and before Vietnam. But like, this movie had that attitude that America and the world had during Vietnam, just that anti-war and cynical view on war. I highly recommend it. I think I had to rent it, but I can't remember for sure. I don't think it's
You don't have I think it might be on the Criterion channel.
No, it wasn't on Criterion. Not? Let me look at where I watched it. It's on Amazon Prime. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't
rent. Yeah. So, all right. Highly recommend that one. I also watched all of the Godzilla and King Kong movies I hadn't seen, so I could watch Kong versus Godzilla, and I will not say that is the best thing I watched this week, but it is something I watched this week.
I'm so glad you felt the need to rewatch all of those movies.
No, first watch. I had only seen the 2014 Godzilla, and so I needed to see everything else, or I would have been lost from the story. Obviously,
yeah, the plot would just go right by you. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I did finish. I did finish the Snyderverse, and that was the second best thing I watched outside of this movie this week. Into the Snyderverse. What the hell is that called?
Into the Snyderverse.
We'll just call it Into the Snyderverse.
That's its name from now on. Yeah. Into the Snyderverse.
Yeah.
I love it.
I thought it was actually much better than I was expecting.
Yeah. Speaking of that, you needed to go watch all the Godzilla King Kong stuff. My hesitation with the Snyder Cut stuff is that I haven't really watched, I think other than Wonder Woman, I don't think I've really dipped my toes in any of the DC stuff. So I feel like, do I need to watch that stuff before I watch the Snyder Cut? I can just jump right in.
I would just dive right in. If you have a tangential familiarity with the characters, you'll be fine. Yeah. If you've seen a Batman movie, you'll be fine, because it's not like there's a Ben Affleck Batman movie out there that you need to go catch up with.
No, there is, though. There's Batman versus Superman.
Which you don't need to watch Batman.
I disagree. I think you do actually need to see that. And I kind of feel like, I mean, you'll understand the beginning of that movie, but if you had seen Man of Steel, it would be helpful. But you probably could just jump in, and it is a 4-hour movie. So
I like the idea. I'll just jump into a 4-hour movie too.
Yeah,
right.
We'll see. It's definitely better than the original cut.
Yeah, I've heard
100% better than the original cut. So
I liked your, I heard your comment that there's like a good movie in there somewhere, maybe that like, you know, in between the two, mm-hmm. the two cuts, perhaps there's a good movie.
I think it's a good TV show. It just doesn't right. stop. Like there's, cause it's separate episodes, but they just, you can't watch it as a TV show. And it actually, if it was 6 45-minute TV shows, it'd be pretty good.
A good miniseries.
Yeah. So, well, we've talked a lot about movies that are not The Way, Way Back. So let's talk about The Way, Way Back, the story of a young man named Duncan, who goes with his mom and his new, I guess his mom's boyfriend, to his summer house.
Right. They're not actually married yet, right?
No, they are not. They've only been dating like a year, I believe.
Okay.
And basically, the movie is about him coming to grips with that his mom's boyfriend is an asshole and coming to grips with like believing in himself and who he is and getting some confidence as a young man. And he ends up working at a water park and befriending one of the people there. So, you know, it's a really, a, you know, this is the most coming of age story that you can get, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And Grace, we'll start with you. What were your kind of initial thoughts on The Way, Way Back? Have you, is this the first time you've seen it or had you seen it?
Yeah, first time I had never seen it. It's like, I was a bit surprised, like when you look up the cast of this movie and you're like, you know, it's Steve Carell, Toni Collette, Allison Janney, like Sam Rockwell, Maya Rudolph, like it's mm-hmm. a Rob Corddry. It's a good, Amanda Peet even, like, you know, it's mm-hmm. a good cast. Like it's all like, you know, every, you know, scene in the movie, like, oh, that person's, you know? And so I was a bit surprised I'd never seen it because I also love coming of age films. That was when I was on Post Show Recaps Theater, the patron show for Post Show Recaps, I picked coming of age as my film genre. So we all picked mm-hmm. coming of age movies. We watched The Breakfast Club, but I thought the movie was fun. I thought it dragged a little at the beginning and then sort of picked up steam. I think the other thing that like sort of really resonated with me is that Water Whiz, like his experience at Water Whiz reminded me a lot of, I have a lot of experience working at summer camp in the mm-hmm. summers, and it had like big summer camp feel. I almost wonder if like working at a like an amusement park is like the same, very similar to working at summer camp. You deal with kids all the time. Mm-hmm. There's like these, like it's a weird level of adult where like the adults who are in charge are like not always the most like serious like mm-hmm. people. They're a bit like yep. hammy, and so, but you like gravitate towards them. And so that relationship, like that whole all that stuff really worked for me. And then I think for sure, wow, Steve Carell's really good at playing a douchebag is my take mm-hmm. from this yeah. movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I definitely agree with you about it feeling like he worked at a summer camp. That part of it is what I really love. And it's just mm-hmm. the summer aspect of it, the summer vacation aspect of it is so much fun. And I love that. I had seen this once before and I remember this movie being a lot funnier than it was. It really, mm-hmm. there was not much, like I didn't laugh much watching this movie. It's pretty sad for the most part. Yeah. And I think the problem with that I had is that I confused. There are three movies that came out around this time that are all very similar. Uh-huh. And I've seen all of them. And I think in my mind, they all mix up into one very fun movie. Right. So as I was watching this, I was like, oh, this is less fun than I remembered. But I do really love all the water park stuff. And it makes me like that would be so much fun to go work at a water park for a summer and be young and free and out like that. So. Brendan, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, so overall, I really enjoyed the movie. I really like coming of age as well. Like I said, I'm a big sucker for a good coming of age film. Like, friggin' Stand By Me is incredible. Or, you know, this also reminded me a lot of Almost Famous and the relationship between Patrick Fugit and Philip Seymour Hoffman in that movie really reminded me a lot of the relationship between Sam Rockwell and Duncan in this film. I'm not recommending Almost Famous, but I wanted to because I've recommended it so many times. But mm-hmm. Overall, I really, really enjoyed this movie. I think that tonally, it's a little jarringly all over the place between the comedy and then the serious blow-up stuff gets so serious so fast that it's a little too tonally whiplashy. Steve Carell is such an asshole that it almost takes you out of the film a little.
That was what I found this time watching it. Steve Carell's character, like he is an asshole and he's horrible. And there are some some clever things they do with the writing to like indicate that he's such an asshole.
Right.
Like the way he talks to Duncan, the way he talks down to him. But this time watching it, I was just like, this guy's a cartoon character. Like, yeah, there's nobody acts like this.
Yeah, he belonged in a different movie, quite honestly. And I think
Space Jam.
Like Space Jam. I think it was also a problem for me because, like, I've had we lost my dad when I was really young. My mom had a lot of boyfriends growing up, and some of them were definitely assholes, but people don't act this way, at least in my experience, that the way Steve Carell's character acted. Like, there's a way to be a passive-aggressive asshole that I've experienced as a kid, especially as a teenager, with stepdads and boyfriends, that, like, this was so over the top that it really took me out of the movie. But I think the other issue I had with it was that the character of Steve Carell's daughter just gets completely erased. Like, where did she go? I can't even tell you what her name was. And it feels like she should have been important, mm-hmm. and could have really been used better and been, like, actually had a voice in the film. And the fact that she didn't, and was just sort of there in several scenes instead of having a voice of her own and being allowed to have a moment where she expressed her own feelings about her dad or Duncan's mom, like, really kind of bugged me, like, that she was just sort of there. And even in the end scene, like, she's just standing there gaping at Duncan when he gets off the water slide and doesn't even get a line of dialogue. It's like they could have used some of the background characters better to make this feel a little more like a cohesive story to me. Because, like, yeah. Even Amanda's Pete's character gets, like, two lines of dialogue in the entire film.
Yeah, right? So you brought up, like, a number of points there. So I want to get Grace to weigh in on some of the side characters. Grace, what do you think first about Steve Carell, his character Trent? Do you think he was a realistic portrayal or...
I have not had a stepfather, but it's so like, it's like they're trying to like make him like evil for the sake of being like his lines, his dialogue is like mm-hmm. When he calls Duncan a three, like there's a way I think to like make that plot point, because it does come up later, like make that work in a way where like he's sort of like being condescending, like he just tells him he's a three. And I know he does sort of like, you know, you could be better than that or whatever, but like, mm-hmm. it's so like mean just for the sake of being mean versus like if you are dating this guy who is this mean to your son, like I know like that's part of the, like the story, the theme of like Duncan's mom of like, you know, why are you doing it? Like, why are you staying with him? Like, he's obviously terrible. And I guess sort of she has to know, but I just feel like, it's so heavy handed so that later in the movie, when the fight at the party happens, that like,
right.
Oh, okay, we already know he's a, you know, he's a dick.
Cosmo 3, right.
Yeah. And so I think it's just a little bit too much. I think he's like, Steve Carell is playing with, you know, he's acting with what he is being given very well. Mm-hmm. But it's like a lot. It's a lot.
And he does act. I mean, like, if you think about his character in The Office, like, you know, Michael Scott is an asshole, but he's a funny asshole. And so he's bringing a lot of the same to this, just without the comedic side.
Right.
And I do think some of the writing is like, there is some subtlety in the writing. It's just not a ton. Like, a lot of it is like very on the nose. Like, I think the way that Trent calls Duncan buddy, like he talks to him you would talk to your dog, where he's like, mm-hmm. hey buddy, go get us a beer. Like, he very rarely addresses him by name. Mm-hmm. And it's only when there's like some big problem going on that he actually calls him Duncan that I noticed in the movie. And the scene where he asks him if he's a or calls him a three, what I like about that, and again, I don't know if this is just like too on the nose, but you know, the movie is called The Way Way Back. Mm-hmm. Duncan is the only one sitting in the way way back, facing the other direction from everybody else in the car. Mm-hmm. And so visually he's like very separated from them. He's going the complete opposite direction. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know if that's kind of like you know, screenwriting 101. To like separate your characters, you know, like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's also like, it's such a visually stunning, perfect perfect summer movie trope to have, like, the giant station wagon where everybody's sitting in different rows, and there's always one person who's in the way, way back facing the opposite way. Mm-hmm. And I know when I was a kid growing up, we had a station wagon exactly like that, and we would always fight over who got to sit in the way, way back and watch the people behind us drive towards us. Like, that was always the best seat.
Even as like, even though you would sit there and you get sick because you're going the other direction. Like, I remember my aunt had a station wagon like that, and we would sit in the way back and then get like sick to our stomach from sitting like that. But, yeah, I thought, you know, the other thing that's interesting is this movie, the way this movie opens is they're in this older looking station wagon. I mean, this movie's from 2013. Duncan has an iPhone, but he's in this old car. They pull into this older looking town. You see Owen right off the bat, and he's in an old car too. Like, I wasn't sure watching this. I was like, I couldn't even remember if this movie took place now, or was this movie, did this movie take place in like the 80s?
Yeah, I almost thought it was supposed to be set in the late 80s.
Right, and the title, The Way, Way Back, like, invokes nostalgia, like thinking, but there's really no theme other than that of like things used to be better, you know, or like you know, like Jim Rash and Nat Faxon, who made this movie, like, I guess they would have been kids in the 80s, so were they, like, calling back to their childhood? But I don't – there's really nothing else in the movie other than, like, there's old cars, and then Duncan puts in his Apple headphones, and you're like, oh, never mind, they're in the present. They're not in the past.
For me, I think, though, that, like, there is something to the, like, summer vacation vibe, like, the, you know, the beach home. Like, I had a cottage growing up. Is, you know, it's this, like, you got to get out, like, get out and play. Like, you're not, we didn't come to the cottage for you to, like, sit and play video games or, like, sit on your phone inside. Not that I had a phone, like, really when I was growing up, but, like, yeah, I had a Game Boy or we had a Nintendo 64, and my mom would get so mad. I remember this one day, my brother had a friend up at the cottage, and they were inside playing video games. My mom said, I'm going to the grocery store and I'll be back. And when I come up, you better be outside. And they moved all of the, they moved the TV and the N64 outside, and they were sitting outside with an umbrella over it because the glare was on the TV. And my mom said, okay, fine, that's very good. But now, like, in 2 hours, like in an hour, you have to, like, you know, have the TV needs to be turned off. Like, you need to be more clear with their instructions. But there is, to me, this, like, sense of, like, for me, summer camp was very much like that of, like, we, you know, we ask kids not to bring their phones. There is this, like, nostalgic feel. That's what, like, camp. It, like, that's what camp for me is. It's, you know, water, you know, whether, again, I'm like maybe confusing water parks and summer camps, but like this idea of like summer vacation is a lot about, like, you know, being outdoors, enjoying yourself. Even the day when, like, they have the rainstorm and she's like, I just want to spend time, like, I want to spend time with you guys. Like, this is what we came to do. It's like a break from your normal life. Right. And so for me, it worked, the sort of like nostalgic feel, even though it is very clearly set, I think, just in 2013.
Yeah, I mean, he's like that. The iPhone really puts you in the time. But yeah, like the bike is an old looking bike. I mean, it does remind me of, and I wish I could think of a good connection for a movie that took place around that time. You know, like around the 80s, because it does have that feel. It does have that, like, retro, and I do feel like that retro aesthetic was big around this time. I mean, some you know, like, some of those, like, indie Fox Searchlight movies kind of all have that, like, I'm thinking of, like, a Little Miss Sunshine type thing, like, where it might take place now, but they make it look like it's got, like, an Instagram filter where it looks like it's older. I do feel like maybe they were going for that. And, yeah, I guess there is some element, like you said, Grace, of, you know, going to this cottage and being in your, at your summer home is, you know, you're not on the internet, you're not sitting in the office all summer. You're doing things outside, you're playing, and you're in this, like, small retro-y town.
The bike is an old bike, because it's like that's the bike you put at the beach house. Like, you don't take the new bike up there. You have the stuff that's, like, been there forever. The only game they have is Candyland, because that's the game that, like, was brought up to the you know,
that's the
feeling I got, and I really enjoyed it. So
And I mean, that's a nostalgia thing that I think, you know, everybody sort of goes through at a different point in their lives. Like, I'm sort of going through a retro beach nostalgia with my family right now, where the last several years, every summer, my mom has insisted that we rent a house down at Merle's Inlet in Myrtle Beach. And as many of my siblings that could come down, great. And we can do all the things that we used to do, like, when we were kids, like, go play putt-putt and go to the beach and play games if it's raining and cook dinner together and grill out and ride around in the golf cart and do all these things that she remembers, like, us doing when we were little kids, mm-hmm. when we used to go to the beach house. And there's a solid 20 years where we never thought about going to the beach. But now all of a sudden that is like coming back into being something she wants to do. And that's sort of the vibe that I got from this movie, was that like this beach trip probably wasn't even the kid's idea to go on.
No,
like
definitely
it was
not.
Definitely like the mom and Nate or Trent, sorry, yeah. trying to capture some sort of bygone family feeling and invoke that and force the family to act like they're a family in a way that they just weren't ready to.
Well, and I wonder too if you know, if the adults made this plan, right? Like Trent goes to this beach house every summer, it seems like. I mean, he's friends with all the neighbors, and they, the kids are friends and things like that. And Duncan kind of got dragged along at the last minute because his dad didn't want him to stay with him over the summer. And that is referenced that, you know, the dad didn't want you, but they don't get into specifics about what happened before they get to this town. You know, everything is just about like that. You know, Duncan's parents are divorced and seems like he splits time and his mom was going to be gone for the whole summer. And it seems like she had to take him. So he really was kind of like, almost fourth wheel because there's the other daughter. So,
And that's actually a really big divorce movie trope as well, is the parent that the kid is currently staying with throughout most of the film is the parent that they don't want to be with. And then it turns out the reason they're with that parent is the other parent doesn't really want them around. And that's always a really big reveal in any movie having to deal with divorce and visiting rights and mom getting a new boyfriend and dad saying, no, you can't stay with me for the summer. It usually turns out that, you know, or whoever, whichever parent isn't in the picture, turns out that they didn't really want them there to begin with. And then it has them develop a new appreciation for and love for the parent that they are with. So, I mean, this movie is pretty chock full of the boilerplate parents and children of divorced movies tropes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not just that Duncan is the kid of divorce too, but Susanna, who becomes friends with the girl next door, her parents are also divorced.
Yep.
So definitely a big divorce kid feel.
Allison J, like Betty killed me. That like you know, I grew up in a small town, so that like we're not talking to the Smiths. Like, you can talk to the Smiths, but we're not talking. I can't remember the family name. Killed me, because that is exactly what like gossipy type stuff is like in those small towns of like everybody talks about everybody's business. And so like she just absolutely killed me as a character in this movie, is like because I thought I like half pain, and I thought she was like the ex-wife or something. I couldn't figure. And then I was like, right. Oh no, she's just like the nosy neighbor. She's so great. It's so funny.
Yeah,
she says when she comes with Peter to the boat, she goes like, "We've already invited yourselves. Get over it. Like we're here." Like, it's great.
I kind of wonder if her character and Amanda Peet's character were one originally, and then somewhere along in the writing process they got split, because it does seem like it would just make more sense and be a little bit more like economical that Betty is the one who Trent is having the affair with, or like has the romantic history with, that it's just like this family next door and they're like each other's summer fling.
Right, exactly. Why is Amanda Peet in this movie when you have Allison Janney? And I think it's because they wanted the Rob Corddry character in there too as the best friend. So it's because the Amanda Peet character and the Rob Corddry character are connected. And then they also realized that they needed other kids for Duncan to be around, so they had to create another family. And it was a necessity thing.
Right. I mean, you got to have a lot of character. I guess you got to have like a community of characters in this movie. And it does make it so it's not like Trent only has one family that he's friends with. Like there's the multiple. Right. So I do like that. I think the idea that Trent and Steve Carell's character and Joan, Amanda Peet's character, are having this affair like so openly.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's where I was like, all right, he's like a cartoon character. Like he wouldn't just like push. I mean, maybe he is an asshole, so maybe he would do this, but I would think that he like wouldn't just be so blatant of like, making out with her on the side of the house when everybody else is hanging out there.
They're like right there.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, a lot of his behavior doesn't track to when he like admits that he's been cheating on Duncan's mom. Like that's another moment where it's like you would think he would just like ground himself in and you know, he's sort of this guy who's like doesn't seem to be wrong ever. So you feel like he would just dig, you know, dig in his heels. But I mean, I do think probably there's too many like adults characters a little bit. You don't need that, like, you know, to say that, like, I mean, I loved Allison Janney's character. I love Betty. You do, like, there's no reason why, like, her kids can't be somebody else's kid. Like, you know, like that he meets somewhere in town at the water park. So, you know, somewhere there's like not, you know, you don't really need that. You're probably right that it was like this is one person. They split them into two characters and just sort of let it go. I think too with like the sister as well, it's just like there's not enough time for everybody in this movie
a little bit
and I don't think it needs to be longer. I think you probably just need to trim people. It's kind of like even with the sister, it's like not that it's like based on a true story or anything, but this idea that like somebody was writing it and was like, well, my stepsister or whatever was there, and it's just like, yeah, but like what does she do in the movie? Like, does she actually need to be, you know, it's like, well,
she's like lays around sunbathing all the time. Like, and I mean, it's definitely like you do get that Mean Girls vibe at the beginning of the movie when they're all laying out, they're like, we're going in the water, but that like her and all of her friends just never really turns into anything.
And you have the one scene where Duncan and the girl next door come back from the water park, and she gets like upset because she was like, I thought we were best friends. And she see, you know, that could have been like really good if we cared about her character at all up to that point.
Oh, yeah, but I forgot about that scene where she's just like, you were supposed to be there for me. And I was like, what?
What since when?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't even realize you two were actually friends. What is happening here? Like, yeah.
And I do think one thing that Grace touched on, which I think is a good point, is like there are too many adult characters, and it's kind of like they should have picked either this movie is about Duncan like being a kid and like the stuff at the water park, which we haven't really talked about that, but that stuff is all so fun and like that's like so free. But like all the stuff with the adults is just like, I don't care. Like, I get that things are rough for him at home. He doesn't fit in.
Yeah.
But I think it almost should have been like, he doesn't fit in, but these people, like Trent isn't just some like cartoon villain, but it's more that it's an adjustment, right? Like actually the way I watched this movie, I was at my mom's house this weekend, and over the last year, she's been in a relationship and her fiance has moved in. They're getting married in May. Like, things have moved very quickly. I'm obviously older than Duncan, and so it's a little bit different, but it is an adjustment to having your mom with another person, and you know, this other person is around all the time, and your life is different. You know, like, I go back and he's there now that he's moved in, like all this stuff is there, and it's all like good positive developments, but it is an adjustment, right? And so have they made it more where it's just more subtle that this guy, like, they just have weird interactions, right? Like, he doesn't mean to be mean to Duncan, like when they have the big blow up at the end, and then Trent apologizes to Duncan. I think that could have been so much more powerful, where it's like, it was actually a misunderstanding, and he's like, hey, I really want to like make this work with you, instead of like, I'm just getting drunk and like screwing around with the neighbor.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, if they had cut out the affair and just kind of made him a jerk and had the confrontation be instead that his mom walked in on him being a jerk to Duncan, and that caused the conflict between
or that he's not even a jerk, that it's like he's being a jerk in Duncan's eyes, but to an outside perspective, I guess it's a totally different movie, but it's like Duncan feels unsure of himself because of the way this new guy in his mom's life is treating him, and like it isn't until he is able to develop on his own at the water park that he comes back and he realizes that, you know, like they're able to mend things, and it's not, it's just awkwardness. It's not like,
if they made it more about seeing Duncan's coming of age rather than his forced coming of age because of his mom's boyfriend having an affair. Right. If we cut out the affair completely, is this movie a better movie?
I think the piece of the movie that, as I'm sort of thinking this through, that like pushes them into a corner is not so much like, I think you're right, probably get rid of the affair stuff, but the reason they have the affair stuff is not for Duncan really so much. It's actually for Pam, like Duncan's right. mom. Sure. And at the end of the movie, you get this sense that like, it's kind of a coming of age, not like it's, you know, Pam's a coming of age, but it's sort of this like growth and development like movie development. Yeah. for both of them. Mm-hmm. And so you get the moment where she like goes and sits with him at the bag. Mm-hmm. And I really loved that stuff. I did really like the scene where she's like packing up and he's like, wait, we're leaving. Like, but like we're leaving with them. And she's like, mm-hmm. sometimes you just need to do like, because it's like, you need to do it. Like you, mm-hmm. like it's like protection or safety or whatever. And I think that like, that could be a really like that's an interesting movie on its own. I just feel like it's not totally this movie. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like when you're trying to push that plot in there, then suddenly you have to have Trent be like an actual asshole. He can't just be like an awkward jerk, right? Exactly. Because the moment needs it's like Duncan it like knows he's a jerk. Like, and if there had been more, maybe like, yeah, that awkwardness, and then finally like they realize he's cheating on his mom. It's like this, like, okay, now it actually proves it. But I feel like they just want to go so heavy handed with him so that you're not like, you know, you also are rooting for Pam. Like, yeah, come on. You got to like, mm-hmm. you need to break up with him. You need to not be with him. And so I think that juxtaposed to like, we really don't see a ton of stuff where he like doesn't fit in with kids in this movie, like people his own age. Mm-hmm. Like he has some awkward interactions with like Susanna at the beginning, obviously, but like even at the water park, pretty immediately, like as soon as he gets hired on, he's like, he goes to like get the cardboard and he's breakdancing and they all love him. Yeah. Like,
okay, I hated the breakdancing thing though.
It's like, I thought it was hilarious.
It was, but like, I like the idea behind it, but like these like guys that are causing trouble at the water park and like, he's going to break it up. Like they wouldn't just be like, all right, do it. And then he does these like dance moves that aren't bad enough. I mean, they're not good, yeah. but it's not like yeah. funny. It's not funny bad. It's just bad.
It's the robot.
And then everybody's like, oh, it's Pop Lock, which is like, I mean, seriously, like we are dating this movie by like referencing Pop Lock and Drop It. Like I love what happens as a result of that and the growth that Duncan has. And like, it reminded me of, you know, my first job in high school where, you know, I kind of came out of my shell after a little while. And like, you know, I do remember like I went to camp as a kid and I think there were times at camp where I was still in my shell. And then like you find that like group of people and you find the people you fit in. So I love all of that. But that scene where he goes and they're like having him dance and he's doing just the worst dancing ever, like no group of kids is gonna be like, this is so cool, this guy is the coolest. Yeah. Like, this would not happen.
I mean, of the things that were awkward and didn't work in this movie, that one bothered me probably the least. It didn't really bother me that much. I thought it was cute and I thought it was fine, because you need that moment, you need that coming out of the shell moment, because he's so uptight up to that point. Yeah. Like, he's so awkward up to that point. You need this movie needs to give Duncan a win, and it needs to do it fast. And I thought this was a really good way to give Duncan a win early in the movie, to give that character some confidence.
What if the win that they give him is they combine something that happens later in the movie, and Duncan is the one that they send down the slide to dislodge the three guys who somehow got stuck in a water slide together.
Instead of being the one.
And so he's the one who saves them. And then like everybody is watching, because like everybody's watching around, because like, oh my God, these kids are stuck in the slide. And they send Duncan in as like the human cannonball to knock them out. That allows Duncan to like get over his fear. You know, there could be some fear about like going and colliding with these guys. And I feel like it accomplishes what the breakdancing did.
So then maybe his nickname is Cannonball or the Plunger. The Plunger?
No.
Because he unclogged it?
The Plunger.
I don't think you ought to be called the Plunger. I don't know how you get stuck in a... I saw that when they show them stuck in the slide. I don't think that's how that works.
No, I mean, there's a documentary that's going to come up later where we're going to talk about how this is possible.
And it's scary. Connection. I mean, getting stuck in a water slide would be very scary. I actually, there's a health club right around the corner from my apartment. And the other day, before I watched this movie, I ran past and they have a water slide that you can see from the outside. And I was thinking, like, water slide's kind of like narrow. And I was like, what if like some, you know, like really heavy kid went in there, or like somebody, like they got stuck, like, you know, like it would be scary, like to get stuck in something. I don't know why I thought that, but it, that was at the end of the line. My brain.
I think it is possible to get stuck. It's the way that they do like the camera into the tunnel to like show them. It's like, that's there's no way they're stuck.
They're like their arms like twisted around each other.
Yeah, like, they're like on each other, whatever.
Like, I feel like just like move your hand and we'll slide down. Like,
one of you climb up over the other ones and you'll be fine.
One other thing about Trent that really bugged me is like when he just like so blatantly I don't even know how to describe this on an audio podcast, but like on video you guys can see it, where he's like goes to like take a swing at
Duncan.
I don't have experience luckily with like child abuse, but I feel like even if he was abusive towards Duncan, he wouldn't do that in public. Like where he's like gonna
That would
like,
not have happened
in. He's not gonna like bro fight him like you would at a bar.
Yeah, he like charges Duncan. That's what he held back. Yeah, he's and like that's the moment where like I think that like again they're like trying to like Trent has to be so evil that like he's willing to like charge his own step kid or whatever. At that point,
of like everybody they know.
Yeah, at that point, Pam should be like, "We're out. Like, I'm not like even driving with you. Like, you just tried to like fight my child."
I think that's also part of the problem that this movie gets into, just in the premise of having them all in the same car, is that there's no way for them to leave without leaving with Trent.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, Owen or somebody, you know, somebody has, you know, they made all these friends, you know.
That's true.
I think, you know, whatever. Again, it's like, you know, they want that moment at the end where like she hops in the back. They want the like book
shelf picture
moment, the bookend moment where like he's in the back of the, you know, he's in the back of the car again, he's leaving, you know, that's a nice, you know, thing. I mean, I get what they were going for.
Is there any chance that Pam and Trent are together? Like they're completely done, or do you think there's any chance that like, I mean, Trent told Duncan that he wants to fix things. Like, do you think that they can get through this and patch things up?
No, not in my opinion. No,
in the movie world, no. In like real life, like people do go back to people who are like
in real life, sure. So,
yeah, maybe.
Okay. That relationship probably lasts until Christmas in the real world.
Yeah.
Until something happens at a family Christmas gathering.
Yeah. And then, they probably aren't together, but I don't think the film was like super clear about it. And I do think that we get the scene where like we don't see any growth from Trent. He apologizes to Duncan, and I feel like with that should come Trent realizing that, you know, he's got to welcome this kid in, that he loves that he loves Pam. Maybe he doesn't because he's cheating on her. So like, why is he even with Pam in the first place?
He's still a jerk at the end of the movie when they go to the water park and he's like, "Why don't you get in the car? All right, come on."
There's the confrontation. Yeah, you're right.
Are we done yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, we done here. I mean, come on, man. Yeah. Fuck off.
Also, you know, Jim Rash, obviously, like if you watch Community, you know, he's the dean in Community. I've also seen him in, what is he in? He's in some of the MCU movies and some of the Spider-Man movies. They're going to write a movie starring Steve Carell with the female lead named Pam.
When I noted when he was at the car and that she runs after Duncan and he's like, "Pam." And I was like, that's good. Yeah, this is funny. Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, that had to be like, I guess that's intentional, but there's no other callbacks to like The Office. I mean, we do have Maya Rudolph. I don't know if Maya Rudolph ever appeared on The Office. She's in the NBC family. So.
Yeah, she's on SNL, and I believe she did a lot of guest spots on 30 Rock. So. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Rob Corddry probably was in The Office at some point as like a you know, I feel like him and Steve Carell are always like, I think they were both Daily Show correspondents together as well.
Correct.
They were, yeah.
So like with this cast, I guess that's like my main big critique is with this cast, this movie should have been funnier. Like there was
they should have spent a lot more time with Owen and the water park staff and building up the comic relief of that part to make some of the more dramatic stuff a little more forgivable, because all the time we spend with Owen is fantastic. Like I love the Pac-Man scene in the arcade. I love Duncan's first visit to the water park and just like how like obnoxiously jokey he is, like, because Duncan takes everything he says so literally.
Yeah, that's good.
And it's all really good. Sam Rockwell, I think, is really fantastic in this movie.
Yeah,
really,
and we haven't talked about Owen at all, but yeah, that is like he embodies that kind of like arrested development, mm-hmm. Not in the show, but like arrested development of an adult. Like, I mean, he's late 20s, early 30s, living and working at a water park and like hanging out with teenagers all the time, like partying.
Exactly. Yeah, like I think it's exactly what Grace was saying. He's that camp counselor that's like 30 years old and out of college and doesn't have a real job, but shows up every year and is the one all the kids want to be like when they grow up, because he's the quote unquote badass, but he's also just kind of a sad individual at the end of the day. But you know, I that's what I really liked about him. Like he was relatable. I thought he was a relatable character.
Yeah, I kind of like that they didn't go the like he's like a sad second. Mm-hmm. I know that he kind of like he does it at a bit of a self-deprecating moment when he's like Duncan's like, I have nowhere else to go. And he's like, okay, but you don't want to be here. Like, right. You don't need to, you know, there's more. Like, you know, this isn't for you, kid, or whatever. He's kind of just like content with his life, I feel like, in a lot of ways. He's like knows he's not doing like, you know, the best, you know, he's not like saving the world. He's not, you know, but he just sort of lives his life. And I really like the Owen character. Remind me a lot of like that camp counselor type person. He had a very relatable line where he says something about, is it Peter is the kid with his mom wants him to wear the eye patch. That's a great, I love that running joke. And he comes and he tells him he's like, you don't have to wear it. Like, take it off. He's like, let me see. And he does this thing. He's like, man, if I had these are all the bits I would do. And I was like, right. Okay. Yeah. That's
like, that's like, so, that
that's so relatable. Yeah, that's, like, these are all the bits I would do with my lazy eye. Like, but he's a really fun character. He's really good. I think, it's good that he doesn't become this like sad sack kind of guy. He like is very, and at the same time,
he's
like,
he's very sure of himself. Yeah. As like in the life that he's
living. He's like, we don't have coffee, and he's like, we absolutely sell coffee.
I loved the coffee bit. The other part that about that Peter scene when they go to the party that I really liked is one of the things about Sam Rockwell and his characters that he plays, he has a lazy eye. Like, most of his movies, you can see that like he has like a lazy eye, and that's like, so it was such a meta moment for him to like give that confidence to a younger version of himself in a movie, like I thought was really cute. And I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, I do really love his character. I love the idea of like he's living, you know, he's living above the water park. Like he's got this apartment there, and he's like, he's just kind of living a simple life, and he likes it. Like he's happy and satisfied with it. And you know, there's like, he doesn't feel that like, you know, he's like a Peter Pan, but he doesn't feel bad about being a Peter Pan. And but he brings that spirit, right, where he's like, I'm not gonna judge your lazy eye. Like, that's awesome. That's very cool. And at the end of the movie, I had forgotten how it ended. And so when they leave without Duncan having a chance to say goodbye, like they leave so quickly, and you know, the family has no idea that Duncan has this whole other life. You know, they don't find out till the end. So I was thinking, like, without Duncan having a chance to say goodbye to Owen, I was like, man, that could be so, you know, if in real life this happened and you have this other life and you're just like, no, we're leaving and you're never going to be back here. So you're never going to see this community that's embraced you and has helped you grow and gain some confidence, where like you're winking at your stepsister, you know, becoming more confident. So, yeah.
I like it. I mean, that's sometimes is a thing. I'm glad that we get that moment at the end where they get to like hug and they say goodbye. But it is a thing when you like, you know, you work with kids sometimes, like they kind of just like leave and you don't see, like, especially summer camps, that it's like, you know, and I think like what I really like, again, just what I really like about Owen's character is this, like, he's such this like uplifting guy who like, he might not have like the most stuff going on in the world, but he's so like empowering of other people. You know, you get that with like some of the other staff. I love that they keep throwing Jim Rash's characters. What is his name? Louis? I can't remember his name.
They keep throwing
him going away parties. Like, I love it. It's
And they're like, you're never going to leave. He's like, this time I'm gone. I'm
gone.
Leaving. Yeah. It reminded me of, so after college, I did 2 years in AmeriCorps, which is like a volunteer program where you're in the one I did where you travel around with a bunch of different people, on different projects. And so we did all these different projects, but the summer of 2008, our project was at the Camden Children's Garden. And so we worked at this children's garden doing like maintenance work and like painting murals and just like, It was very similar to working at a water park where we're just hanging out in the children's garden all day and there's kids running around all over and they're like, hey, go like clean this up or go like, you know, today we're gonna have you guys paint this chair or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it did remind me a lot of my time in AmeriCorps. And I think I probably had that feeling the first time I watched this as well, because this was came out 5 or so years after I was in AmeriCorps. And there were like the characters who were in this were very similar to the people who were like actual employees at the Children's Garden who worked there summer, you know, every summer. And so in that way, that stuff is all very realistic. I just felt the stuff with Trent was less so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And what I like about Owen's character is that it shows that like you can be a good person and have impact on people's life and mm-hmm. their lives without, you know, he works at a water park, you know, that's just what he does every day. So I like that. I liked all the staff except for, I think his name is Roddy, because he's a perv who preys on all the people waiting in this line. Other than that, really? That was like, I was like, oh, this is.
So
like,
Roddy is played by Nat Faxon, who was the writer and director with Jim Rash of this movie.
Right.
So he wrote himself to be like the creepy guy. And I don't know if the movie intended him to be where he's like, step forward, stay there. Like, I don't know if he definitely
was. And I appreciated that the movie didn't shy away from having a character like that in it, because those people and those types of people that work those summer jobs
definitely exist.
So I appreciated that the inclusion of a character that was probably very, you know, realistic to the time and place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it reminds me of like working in, you know, I remember working in a restaurant in college, and like you have like the people making like very off color. Like it's like, that just does exist for sure.
So, yeah. For sure.
All right. Anybody have anything else before we head into feedback from our listeners? No? All right. Well, maybe the feedback will spur some other questions. Then we'll do connections. Grace, I think you're the guest who's going to probably be able to do the connections the best of all of our guests, because you've kept up with so many episodes of the podcast. But let's see. All right. So listener feedback. Jeff, getting this in at the wire, like literally about 10 minutes ago, I got this feedback from Jeff. He just finished watching it because he was on his own vacation, post-vaccination vacation. So he said, but he did get this in. I appreciate Jeff's commitment. He said, I remember sitting in the way back as a kid. My brother and I loved it. Trent is such an asshole to Duncan. I remember my sister dating a couple guys that were like that, treating me like shit, and I hated them. The whole opening – sorry, I should have laughed, but that just, you know, I'm so strong, Jeff. Sorry. The whole opening of this movie had me cringing. I liked Owen's character. The stuck-in-the-tube scene was pretty funny, probably my favorite moment. All in all, a pretty enjoyable movie. I give it 3.5. Do you want to read Owen's feedback?
Sorry, I was averaging in Jeff's score. I apologize.
Doing some math, yes.
Yeah, I was doing the math. So, all right. Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate it. So, Owen says, I have to call back to Brendan's comment at the end of last podcast that it would be nice and good to go back to a comedy after the last few films. I don't think this was much of a comedy, especially compared to The Commitments. While Fitzcarraldo also had more funny moments in it for me. That, however, is not to say that it was a bad movie, more of a teen angst and dysfunctional family drama, but with bright lighting, a fast pace, and a positive soundtrack. Yeah, we didn't really talk much about the soundtrack. I really enjoyed the soundtrack to this film. Mm-hmm.
There's one song that's in the trailer that is actually the song I pulled for the outro last week.
Okay.
And I've had that song stuck in my head since I watched this movie. It shows up towards the end when they're packing up the car to leave.
Yeah. So. If Sam Rockwell's character was meant to be genuinely funny, then it felt pretty much like the Maya Rudolph character. Then I felt that pretty much like the Maya Rudolph character did, though he did push the emotional core of the film along. Nat Faxon and Allison Janney were probably the funniest characters. Was an easy flowing watch. Just never really laughed. 3.5 out of 5. And yeah, that's something that that I think we brought up at the beginning of the pod. I thought this was like just a straight up comedy when we were going into it. Very happy that we were moving on to a comedy, and was like really surprised at the balance of comedy and drama in this, because I really thought this was like a straight up comedy. So
That's my fault. I forgot that it's as serious as it is. I think I confused it with some of the other movies that I might bring up in a couple minutes here. And he does bring up the Maya Rudolph character and her view towards Owen. And I think that was pretty well written, that stuff, because you can tell that they do have, you know, there's some romantic history between them, but they're close, they're friends. And she does kind of get annoyed with him and just like roll her eyes at him a lot. And the scene where she calls him out, it was after he knocks the kids out of the tube, because doing that, you could really hurt those kids and like you could get the whole park shut down. And so that she calls him out. And she's like, why do you make me have to be this person? Like, you act like a jackass and I have to call you out to it.
Exactly.
And I have had experiences like that before where like you have a friend who acts like an asshole and it's like, oh, come on, you're going to make me like call you out. You're like, you're acting like this. I have to like be the bad guy here. So I thought that was pretty well done.
They do a bit of a disservice to her, I think, in this, you know, a little bit like the sister, is that like she has an interesting story. I think that is interesting. That is relatable. But they kind of yada yada through like her forgiving Owen a bit, you know?
Right. And you get the impression that at the end of the movie that she's going to stay and keep working at the water park and try to develop that relationship with him. I just wish we had gotten to see more of it. Right. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that they put their arms around each other at the end made me think like this happens all the time. Like they always have these like little spats, and then they're just like, oh, it's fine. You know, he just puts his arm around her. Like I felt like that was kind of hinted at, but yeah, there was. We don't know. We don't get. I mean, I think this whole movie, if the whole movie is told from the water park perspective, and then it's like halfway through the movie, we find out like Duncan has all this shit going on at home that we didn't know about. I think maybe that would be a little bit better. We have tons of notes for Jim Rash.
Yeah, really. Jackson.
All right. I get a short one. Jim Crumley says, The Way, Way Back was a pretty good coming-of-age film, 3.5.
Yeah, and thank you, Jim, for getting your feedback in at the last second as well. I got his email right as we started to record.
Very good.
Megan the Librarian let us know that she watched the movie and post her review. So she says, lots of actors somehow signed up on this film. With this terrible script. I think it might have been consciously referencing Dirty Dancing, and I'm offended on Dirty Dancing's behalf that something so bland would dare to invoke it. 2 stars.
Oh, man.
Ouch. That is a very harsh review.
Harsh.
But I understand what she's saying. With the Dirty Dancing thing, I mean, the Sam Rockwell character definitely is akin to Johnny from Dirty Dancing, and it's a coming-of-age story, this time from the perspective of a young adolescent male instead of a young adolescent female, you know, and they both have their own daring stunts that their parents would disapprove of, so yeah, I can definitely see the connection.
I've never seen Dirty Dancing before, actually. Ooh, so.
Me either.
And yeah,
maybe I'll watch Dirty Dancing and then I'll hate this movie.
Yeah. You'll be like, oh my god, this is like a terrible ripoff of Dirty Dancing.
So bad.
Right. Well, just it didn't also take place in the Catskills.
Yeah, just from the little bit that I've seen of it, I feel like there are definitely some similarities. I think that probably would be a strong, good connection. So I'll be curious if Megan sent that as a connection later on.
Yeah, and I don't remember if I said Owen's score out loud. He was also a 3.5, and that's gonna give us a listener average of a 3.13.
Nice. 3 and almost a third. all right, Grace, what is your rating?
I think I gave it a 3.5. I think that like talking through it, I think it's interesting. Like normally when I listen to the podcast, by the end of the podcast, you're like, I actually liked it more than I did than when I watched it, like after talking about it. And I think this is for me is the opposite, that like I thought it was quite good, and then they're like, you start poking at the holes, you're like, oh, that's a pretty big hole, like doesn't really work. Like I was impressed with Steve Carell's like performance in the movie. It's just like right that it probably doesn't fit thematically. So I think I had a 3.5. I think I'll change it to a 3.
All right, well yeah, I think I am actually very similar to you. I think before this watch, I had this movie as like one of my top summer movies ever. I was like, oh, it's such a great summer movie. And I do like the summer aspects of it. And I like the idea of the movie I came up with better. It just wasn't very funny. I think I probably am like Grace, where I came in as a 3.5, and I'm gonna go down to a 3 as well. So
There's a Reddit channel, I think, that's like all about like punching up scripts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think like fix bad scripts or something. So perhaps we need to post and get all the likes.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I feel like I don't often try. I mean, maybe I do on this podcast, but in general, I try to like to just accept the movie for what it is. But I do think like the idea of a, you know, awkward kid learning to be cool working at a water park is a good idea. And I think I don't need this like cartoon character villain.
Yeah, I think that enough of the movie resonated with me to bump it up slightly higher than you guys, despite the, you know, I was probably maybe even the harshest in the criticism of it. I think thematically there's a lot there that works, even if some of the characters don't. Obviously, there are a lot of side characters I wish we had gotten more time with or had been condensed down. I still think this is a really good watch. You know, it's a brisk 100 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it moves really, really quickly. The soundtrack is really, really good. It really does take you back to, especially like when I was a kid growing up, this, you know, was the kind of thing, the kind of summer that you would have going to a beach house. And you had friends that you only saw over the summer that lived in the same neighborhood as you or the same cul-de-sac that your beach house was on, and you went to play putt-putt, and you went to the water park, and you went and swam in the ocean, or you just sat on the beach and read. And so thematically, this movie like hit a lot of good nostalgia beats for me. Steve Carell's character, while, you know, it just doesn't work. He's in a completely different movie, even though Steve Carell is a really great actor. I enjoyed everybody else in this movie with what they were given. I think I'm still going to stick with the 3.5 I was planning on giving it when I came in, mm-hmm. instead of lowering my score like you guys.
Yeah. Good. You got to stand firm, Brendan. You know,
I'm going to stand up for what I believe in. And that is going to give us
It's
going to give us a 3.21 overall.
Just below the cutoff to average up to 3.5. So that'll be a 3 overall.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about connections. Obviously, the title, The Way Back versus The Way Way Back, is a connection. Grace, did you have any other connections that you caught between these few movies?
There's not a ton. I mean, I think there were some I was thinking of like previous episodes. It is a little bit of... I mean, this is like a pretty common movie thing of like, I can't remember what the story thing that like Dan Harmon uses a lot, but like putting someone in like an uncomfortable like situation. Mm-hmm. It's pretty common. So like it will like come up, like there's a fair few. That's a bit similar in the sense that he's like, he's now suddenly, I guess for him, he's like back somewhere. Last week in The Way Back, he's back somewhere. That's like an unusual situation for him. Whereas Duncan, this is like a totally new place, and he sort of, you know, maybe in the same way that last week Ben Affleck's character, you know, connects with the football team, Duncan connects with the waterwork staff. I can't think of a ton of others.
I mean, the fact that they're just new jobs for the main characters, I mean, is a bland general, you know. Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of drinking in both movies.
Yep. I definitely had like adults drinking inappropriate or irresponsibly.
Was for sure.
Also just like not great father figures. I mean, that's been a theme over the last few movies. And you know, I think it's obviously different in The Way Back, but it's obviously a theme. Like we've had like daddy issues month here on the Movie Ladder podcast almost. We're like 3 in a row now. And the other one is like a little bit of a looser connection, but I remember last week watching The Way Back, I was like, you know, I think it would be kind of fun to be like a basketball coach, like have an impact on kids' lives. And in this one, I'm like, you know, it'd be kind of fun to work at a water park and live above the water park and have an impact on kids' lives. So I think from a, like a little bit of a tangential connection, there's that as well. And where did the last movie was L.A. So I was going to say, like, they're both like summer feel movies.
They do have beach scenes, right?
Yeah, that's true. All right. What about these two other connections to other movies from this year? So movies that we've done this year, I cannot do this from memory anymore. I have to look at it. Young Frankenstein, Life of Brian, Spartacus, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Philadelphia Story, My Best Friend's Wedding, Always Be My Maybe, Speed, Sorcerer, Fitzcarraldo, Commitments, Damned United, and then The Way Back last week.
I think there's a lot of awkward family dynamics and parents trying to do their best with their kids and kids adjusting to changes that their parents are making in their lives, like in Damned United and The Way Back, as well as, you know, awkward kids or really funny sidekick kids in both My Best Friend's Wedding and The Philadelphia Story. We had really great 1-2 scene performances from kids that almost stole the show. Between this movie's Star Wars Pete and the younger sister in Philadelphia Story and and the kids in My Best Friend's Wedding.
What kids?
Didn't Cameron Diaz's somebody had the younger siblings that were like trying to sneak away?
Were like with the helium balloon.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Grace, anything that stands out to you?
I don't really have much from this year's. Yeah.
No, the only other thing that stands out is damage to a vehicle.
Okay.
Duncan lays on the top of the station wagon and dents it. And we had Speed and Sorcerer, which both have damaged vehicles, and I guess Fitzgeraldo as well.
So. We definitely did that when I was a kid too. We would sit on top of the station wagon.
Yeah, I never did that, but I do remember very little bit of a tangent. My mom like ran into a store and she left me in the car with the car running, and I took like the cigarette lighter that you could push in, and I like discovered how to use it, and I pushed it onto the seat and like burnt a hole into the seat.
So
I was younger than Duncan and it was not intentional, but all right. Well, what's your movie map, Brendan?
So I had a couple. So the first one that really came to mind was Columbus, which
that was the one that came to mind for me as well.
I mean, you know, John Cho's character is much older than Duncan in this movie, so it's, he's definitely not a teenager. He's a college graduate. So, but it is sort of a coming of age that is brought about by a stranger that they didn't expect to meet and distance between the parent and the child. And then I also had down for the movie map 500 Days of Summer, just because it's a guy going throughout different relationships in his life over the course of a summer. So
I had Columbus written down as well as the closest connection. I think Harold and Maude, you know, where you have like an older character who's mentoring a younger character in a way.
But I thought about that as well.
Yeah, I think Columbus is the strongest. Grace, anything stand out to you as like a season one connection for the movie map?
I did have, I can't remember what it, not really. I don't really have anything. I was thinking like Groundhog, maybe he's like in this new, you know, again from the, like, he's in this like weird situation and like, you know, has all these quirky people he's sort of meeting or connecting to, but that's not very strong. But
yeah, I do think actually, so the opening scene where they're driving into town, I got like a My Cousin Vinny vibe from when they're driving in My Cousin Vinny. I think it's when he sees Owen driving behind them. I feel like there was a scene in My Cousin Vinny where they like saw somebody who turned out to be a main character like in the car behind them. So very weak connection.
All right.
Well, speaking of weak connections, hopefully we don't have any weak connections as we talk about our connections for next week. So these are connections sent in from the listeners, and then we each brought a couple of our own. We will have a final three and then decide what we're watching for next week. So we will start with Jeff again. Got his stuff in under the wire. So the first is Back to the Future, and his main connection is the title, the word back in the title, but I think you'd also connect, you know, a younger child with an older mentor as well would be a connection.
And the fact that we're going way, way back would maybe mean we are going back to the future.
Yeah. And that travel. We felt like the aesthetic in this movie was like nostalgic back for, you know,
the 80s.
Back to the Future was one of the ones I put on my list as well, so I will be crossing that off. So Jeff read my mind. The next is a coming of age story, specifically about Cameron's coming of age story, and that is in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Also involves a car. We won't, if you've never seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody knows, but yes. Secondhand Lions, which I have heard that title. I have no idea what it's about.
That's about a young Haley Joel Osment who gets sent to live with two eccentric uncles played by Robert Duvall and Michael Caine. I really like Secondhand Lions. It's a very sentimental film. It's about finding mentors when, you know, your parents can't care for you.
Are there bad fathers in that movie?
There are bad fathers.
Well, oh, look at that. Oh, we can continue the month. And then the last one is a blind spot for me that I think is a blind spot. Brendan does not like that it's a blind spot for me, and that is Galaxy Quest. The connection there is Sam Rockwell.
Yes. Brilliant movie. Brilliant movie. I love Galaxy.
I think Jeff wants me to see that as well. All right. So then Megan the Librarian, she did send in her most obvious movie connection. Awkward teen goes on summer vacation, starts secretly working with resort staff, learns to dance, impresses her family with a daring stunt. This is the plot of Dirty Dancing.
Yep.
And Toni Collette.
Who goes to Dynamite?
Yeah. Toni Collette and Baby carrying watermelons has to be intentional. So
yeah, there's a big scene where Baby carries a watermelon, and there's a very similarly framed shot in this movie of Toni Collette doing the same thing. If you look on our Twitter, Megan sent it to us on Twitter, and you can see like the similarity, and it definitely feels like it was intentional.
Yeah. So I've never seen Dirty Dancing either, so that's another blind spot for me. I think I always confuse like Dirty Dancing and Footloose and Flashdance.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do bring up Footloose in this film, don't they?
Yeah, I think they do, because they
talk. I'm holding up for a hero. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah, they do bring up Footloose.
That movie, that scene actually really made me laugh. I liked that.
All right, Olin wrote in, I, Tanya. The link is Allison Janney in an Oscar-winning performance as an addicted, out-of-sorts mother. I don't think Allison Janney. Well, I guess she was kind of addicted to drinking in this. The next is The Descendants, Jim Rash and Nate Faxon, or Nat Faxon. I keep wanting to say Nate Faxon. His name shouldn't be Nat.
It is Nat, yeah.
I know, it's Nat. It shouldn't be Nat. Oscar-winning adapted screenplay.
Yeah, and that film also has a lot to deal with parents who are going through trauma and the way that trauma is impacting their kids. I don't want to spoil anything. I just watched The Descendants from my personal ladder a couple weeks ago. Highly recommend it. Incredibly emotional George Clooney performance. The kid actors are also really great in it. I won't be picking it just since I watched it so recently, but it's a really good connection. And
yeah, I definitely can see why it's the same group that made both movies. I feel like The Descendants is like, if they say we're just going to do the family stuff, we're going to focus more on the family stuff. Right. And it is like a summer vacation movie. So it's a great connection to this for sure.
Yeah.
And his last connection is three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. Sam Rockwell, Oscar winning performance, playing a character who doesn't do his job by the book. Can be quite irritating. Why is All in All about Oscar performances? Just because the Oscars are coming up?
Because the Oscars are coming up, yeah.
Oh, okay, because there's no Oscars connection to
this. We're in Oscar season.
Yeah.
People were saying that Sam Rockwell, after this movie came out way, way back, there was a lot of buzz that they thought Sam Rockwell deserved an Academy Award nomination for this movie. I don't know that I agree, but, you know.
I don't think so. All right, and then Jim Crumley said his connection is Hot Tub Time Machine for Rob Corddry and seasonal movie ties.
Yep.
Also, I'm sure they probably have to go back, so you could use that word.
Yeah.
Brennan, we didn't do a title for Way, Way Back to Way Back as our connection. Forgot to do that.
It's a title. It's a title connection.
Yeah. It's just anything you want to put as, like, you know.
Yeah. I would put Going Further Back.
Going Further Back. All right.
Yeah.
Going way further back.
Yeah, it's too bad there's not a movie called The Way, Way, Way Back.
I know, it would have made it so easy.
I also looked for something involving forward and
yeah.
All right, cool. Well, listeners who skip to the ladder will just have they'll have a brief little bit of connection.
Fantastic. All right,
Grace, do you want to go first or last?
Yeah, I can go first. I feel like this is one that I think you probably had on your list, I'm not entirely sure, but I the first thing that sprung to mind was Adventureland. Yep. In terms of a movie where they work at a theme park. Pretty obvious connection there. I had another theme park connection that I thought could be interesting is the original Westworld movie, because it's a theme park. The other one, I'll say one more, which is the 2007 film Hot Rod, which is
Andy Samberg.
It's a sort of a cult favorite of mine. But he's basically trying to like pull off a Daredevil stunt in the same way that they are trying to, you know, the scene at the end of the movie where Duncan tries to pop through the pass on the water slide. I felt like that could be a fun connection.
Yeah, actually, Hot Rod came up when I was Googling, looking for connections for, like, bad fathers. Apparently, there's some father stuff.
Yes, there is. So, yes, for sure.
Yeah. All right, cool. So Adventureland, Westworld, and Hot Rod are your connections.
Yeah, excellent. Adventureland was on my short list. Not use it. So the first one movie I wanted to bring up is one that I hinted at earlier in the episode. So they even talk about it in this movie. There was a theme park that was the most dangerous theme park ever created, and it was in New Jersey. And there was recently a documentary released by HBO Max about it called Class Action Park, narrated by the great John Hodgman. I watched it. I really love it. I would highly recommend it, and it makes sense to recommend here because of the dangerous water park.
It would be our first documentary.
It would be our first documentary, and I feel like I have failed as the guy that loves documentaries to not recommend enough documentaries on this show. But highly recommend people check it out, even if
you're not a guy.
Yeah, exactly, Doc. I wanted to pick a Sam Rockwell movie that I have never seen, and so I thought it would be fun, instead of going to the beach, to go to the rocky shores of the moon. And I picked Moon.
That was on my list. That was my
fourth. It's a blind spot for me. And
it's really good.
Yeah.
I just watched it last year, but it's definitely, we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah. I also thought I wanted to go with a Steve Carell movie that involves an awkward relationship that goes not so great, but I think this movie is slightly funnier than this one, probably, even though I haven't seen it. Date Night with him and Tina Fey. And then this movie also really reminded me of National Lampoon's Vacation, where they are trying to get to the amusement park at the end of the road. I've never seen the 2017 remake with Ed Helms, so I'm throwing in Vacation.
And you also have the Office connection there, too.
Yeah, and then you have the Office connection as well. So the honorable mentions, Steve Carell seeking a friend for the end of the world. Mm-hmm. Also, I was going to throw in Little Miss Sunshine, just because there were so many similarities with this and Little Miss Sunshine, including like 10 cast connections.
Yeah, you're stepping on all mine.
All right, we'll go for it. Sorry, I'll stop my honorable
mention. I actually only had one connection written down before we started recording. Well, and then I researched a bunch right before we started. So, and look at that. Just like me, every week I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 written down now. So, but the problem is a lot of them are ones I've seen. That was the problem.
Right.
So the two movies that I confused this with, one was Adventureland, like Grace said. Mm-hmm. The other is The Spectacular Now, which came out right around the same time. It's similar, mm-hmm. like summer movie coming of age. It's got Miles Teller in it. So I will throw The Spectacular Now on my list. Nice. I don't know if you ever saw that, Brendan, but
I've not seen The Spectacular.
Yeah, I always get that confused with this.
The
next is a summer movie I haven't seen. I couldn't really tell you anything about it, if it even has any connections, but it's a summer movie. So I will go with American Graffiti. Let's see, what else do I want to do? So I did have Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, because that's got Steve Carell and Rob Corddry in it, and Little Miss Sunshine. I'm not gonna put either of those on my list, though. Let's go with Sam Rockwell in a movie that's been on my watch list for a while that people really like. That is Seven Psychopaths. I know nothing else about it except that Sam Rockwell's in it, and an Allison Janney movie with people drinking and partying. That's from a couple years ago. That is Ma. Allison Janney is in that movie. Let's go one more. Summer movie. Let's just go the summer movie connection with a lot of comedians that are in comedy, like in sitcoms, like network sitcoms. That's the movie The To-Do List. Aubrey Plaza is the lead. She plays a lifeguard in that movie. And it's about her right before she goes to college. So. Also thought about Heavyweights as well. I've seen it so many times. How many did I write down? 1, 2. Okay, only 4.
Too many.
Yeah. Look at that. I come in and I say I don't have any connections, then I have way too many.
Right. Look at this guy. At this guy over here with all his connections.
Right. All right. Brendan, you want to read off what we got from everybody and then we'll pick?
I would love to. So we have Back to the Future, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Secondhand Lions, Galaxy Quest, Dirty Dancing, I, Tonya, The Descendants, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Hot Tub Time Machine, Adventureland, Westworld, Hot Rod, Class Action Park, Moon, Date Night, Vacation, The Spectacular Now, American Graffiti, Seven Psychopaths, Ma, and The To-Do List.
All right. I get to go first.
Yes, you do.
Because I read last. Oh, man. I'll go Dirty Dancing. I like that connection, and I've never seen it. So
nice.
Dirty Dancing for me. Brendan, how about you?
Hey, so we're only picking one this week?
Yep. Oh, yeah, only one because right. We have three of us.
All right, all right, all right. There's a few ways we can go. I mean, we've done so many blind spot movies where one of us has a blind spot and the other one doesn't. Mm-hmm. I think it actually would be really fun to talk about a movie that both of us probably haven't rewatched recently, but I would like to, and that's I'm gonna go, and it makes the most sense. Adventureland makes a ton of sense. I would love to go back to Adventureland.
All right.
You know, go ahead.
I was just gonna say there's a very obvious connection if we pick Adventureland for the week after.
Right, naturally, yeah.
And then we can do the sequel the week after that.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll let you figure that out.
Those are all on my own movie ladder at one point. So.
Oh, nice. Oh, do you have a personal movie ladder yourself?
Yeah, I haven't kept up with it. Too much Clone Wars, but I do have one. Kind of got stalled out at one point. Yeah.
Nice. I love it.
You know what? If Brendan, if you're like the sheriff of documentaries, I'll be your deputy. I'll add Class Action Park.
Nice.
You can pick something else because there's no way I'm going for a documentary next week. So.
Very, sir.
I know. Maybe. We'll see. all right. Well, two I haven't seen and one I have seen in Adventureland.
You just sound like you really want to do Dirty Dancing.
I mean, it'd be fun, right? Like, I guess, Brendan, you've seen it before?
I have seen it before. I would probably want to get a guest for that. Let's see if it's streaming, if we did it.
Yeah, that's a good point. We didn't look up any of these.
See if it's streaming first. I'm sure it's probably on HBO Max.
I did think about making the joke of The Office, since we do have Steve Carell and then Pam. We just watch an entire season of The Office.
there were so many other good ones to pick from for this. I mean, there's, I also, like I said earlier, I could have gone with Almost Famous as a connection again. It really thematically reminded me a lot of that.
I really like keeping with the summer movies.
For sure.
But Dirty Dancing is on HBO Max. I don't know if you say that.
Yeah, I did.
I wasn't
listening. I said that would be my guess, is that it's on HBO Max. On HBO. I don't know why.
And Adventureland is also on HBO Max, and Class Action Park is on HBO Max. So
we are sticking with the Max.
So Adventureland came out in 2009. Wow. So that was 4 years before The Way Way Back. It does kind of feel like The Way Way Back sort of ripped off Adventureland.
I mean, there are so many movies that, you know, you could say that about, but sure.
Yeah,
I think Jim Rash had this idea, and that they had this idea for quite a while, The Way Way Back, this movie idea, which might also explain why it's like feels a little bit pre its time than it actually is.
That's true.
I wonder if it's autobiographical. I wonder if Jim Rash had this go on in his life. Well, how do we pick? I don't know. Like, I mean, Grace, where do you think we should go? Like, of these three?
I mean, I suggested Adventureland, but I was going to pick Dirty Dancing if you didn't pick it, because it's a big blind spot. I feel like it's a huge blind spot for my, so I'd be excited to watch it and then listen to you podcast about it.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm sort of leaning, but.
Yeah. I think Dirty Dancing is very different than any movie that we've done.
Is very different than any movie we've ever done, and I think we would have a good podcast about it.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say that we definitely need to get a guest for it.
That's fine.
That would be the only thing I'd say.
I think we
but know. I don't want to spoil anything about Dirty Dancing. But it's,
yeah, I mean, I know that we'll have the time of and, I know that we'll have the time of our lives.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's do Dirty Dancing. Buy some watermelons and fire up HBO Max. And Emilio Ardolino is the director of Sister Act and Three Men and a Little Lady. Oh man. Yeah.
It's like the moment where, like, you know, like the start of a sports where like all possibilities are endless, and you're like already seeing like, you know, three movies past Dirty Dancing.
Yeah. It's interesting he did Three Men and a Little Lady and not Three Men and a Baby.
Yeah. Right? Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Took over the sequel.
So. I would say this movie, Dirty Dancing, if you don't know a lot about it, it takes place around the same time if you've seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Mm-hmm.
it's set around the same time period. Yeah, it's set in the 1950s. It's also set in the Catskills, like season two of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It's got a lot of, if we could do TV shows, I would connect it to Maisel after it. So
I feel like I just, because I still have the tab for Spectacular Now up in my Chrome, and like I do kind of want to watch Spectacular Now again and try to figure out like, what I attributed Why? To the way back, what I attributed to the Spectacular Now, and what I attribute to Adventureland. Because Spectacular Now was also 2013. Like, I think Spectacular Now and Way Back are like super similar movies. So
are you saying that we need to change to Adventureland and then just do a trilogy of Adventureland?
No, well, I mean, that would be interesting. What I was going to say is if we do Adventureland, we have to do Zombieland the next week. So.
Ah, that's true. That's a good point.
No, I think I'll just watch Spectacular Now on my... and all this free time that I have this week.
Fair enough.
All right. So next week we're doing Dirty Dancing. The connection, I guess, for now we'll say is like Way, Way Back was a shitty remake of Dirty Dancing, potentially. So it's on HBO Max. Check it out there or, you know, wherever videos are sold. So.
All right.
All right, Grace, what are you going to be watching this week?
More reality TV, finishing up Dark, and yeah, I think that's
what season of Dark are you in?
I'm halfway through season two. That's right. Nice. I literally finished the season two episode four, so exactly halfway through.
And are you gonna watch The Circle? Is The Circle coming back this week?
The Circle comes, I don't know exactly when it comes back, but I definitely be watching. I haven't watched the UK version, but the American one, because it's on Netflix, I'll definitely watch it.
Yeah, international reality shows are hard for me to keep up with. Like, I've tried to keep up with, I mean, I've watched Australian Survivor, but like, I tried to keep up with their, like, this old South African Survivor that they're podcasting about. Right. And I just couldn't keep up. I just couldn't do it. It's too much American stuff for me to watch. So,
fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. How about you, Brendan?
Yeah. So, a couple of different things. So, we are going to be up to the 70s on the Criterion Challenge. And
if you've kept up, not me.
I have been keeping up, and okay. I'm going to be taking on the musical All That Jazz next, which I'm really excited about. Roy Scheider. I love musicals. Leave me
alone.
Do you
remember All That Jazz from a couple weeks ago, Brendan?
Oh, God. Damn it.
Enjoy the movie.
I'm very excited. Well, not anymore. But for my personal ladder, I just watched Ordinary People earlier this week, and I'm going to take Robert Redford, who directed that film, to one of his more recent films, 2018's The Old Man and the Gun, which came out, and basically about an old man who decides to go rob a bank, and I don't know anything about it, and I'm excited to watch it.
It's his retirement movie. He's done after that. Well, he showed up in Endgame, but like pretty much.
It's pretty much his retirement movie. So one last job, as they say.
One last job. All right. Well, for me, I am a week behind on the Criterion Challenge. So I'm in the 60s. So I'm going to watch In the Heat of the Night.
Nice.
But I don't know when, because I have to watch two James Bond movies over the next two nights. Because Mac and I are getting back together on Thursday to do our last James Bond podcast on For Your Ears Only. So we're doing Skyfall and Spectre. And then
Am I hyping up Skyfall too much for you?
Well, world has hyped up Skyfall for me. I know it's supposed to be very good. So I'm watching Skyfall tonight and then watching Spectre tomorrow. And I don't know what else I'll watch this week. Maybe The Spectacular Now. I don't know. We'll see. I'm up to Blood Simple in my personal movie ladder as well. So lots of things on the watch list. Plus, I have a couple TV shows I'm trying to catch up on. So plenty of screen time to keep me busy in these days. So... but for that, we will be watching Dirty Dancing. We'll all be watching Dirty Dancing next week to talk about it. And it's on HBO Max. Grace, thank you for making your movie ladder debut. Hopefully we have you on again sometime soon.
Hope you had a good time.
Yeah. This was so fun. It was great. It's like, you know, not a movie I had had on my radar at all, but it was really fun to talk about.
That's how I feel about Dirty Dancing. I've never had the desire to watch Dirty Dancing before. Now I'm going to know why they put Baby in the corner, right?
That's finally figured out.
What are you doing podcast-wise? What stuff do you have coming up?
So hold up, we're on a bit of a we're in between seasons right now. So we finished our second season. We did 8 episodes for the first season. We did 10 for season 2. Our season finale was about Friends. We did the one with Chandler's dad. So very interesting to look back retrospect from the early 2000s about basically they've said now that Chandler's dad would have been a trans woman, but at the time they were like, I don't know, they're a drag queen maybe, I don't know, and they dress in women's clothing all the time. Yeah, they did not understand. So it was really fun to talk about. We had a great guest, Ariel. The Ariel that sucks hangs around the recaps world. But you could catch up on those podcasts. We'll be back probably in May to chat about some more stuff at Hold Up Podcast on Twitter. Awesome. That's about it, I think, for the.
Have you guys done the Birdcage? Because that's come up a couple times on this podcast.
I did get literally. I got a message from my friend Dan, who was like, "You should probably do the Birdcage." So that could be the season 3 premiere for sure.
Highly recommend Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge from 1985.
Yeah. And there's actually suggestions today. Great.
There's also a documentary about the making of this movie and about like the Mark Patton, who was the lead non-Freddy Krueger lead in this movie, like what his life turned into after this. Because like, everybody should watch this movie. This movie is wild.
I haven't seen Freddy 2 since I was a kid, so I have no memory.
Yeah, you would pick up on a lot more than you did. Hopefully more coming of age movies come up for us, and we know you can be our coming of age correspondent.
Great, that's wonderful.
I like that. Very cool. And you plug your own Twitter, and now you plug the podcast.
Oh, at Hi From Grace. Check me out.
At Hi From Grace. Say hi to Grace. So,
say hi.
Brendan, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Fidzy Brendan. Should be coming your way in a couple of weeks with some more Star Wars coverage, post show recaps.
That's a little
tease that I can't really give too much information on at the moment, but I'm pretty excited, and I hope you guys are too. And I hope you checked out the Clone Wars podcast like Grace did, because we had Mike Bloom and I had a lot of fun with it.
That was very good. I have not watched Clone Wars, so I only listened to the first 45 minutes, but you did a good job making me want to watch it if I ever had the time to watch Clone Wars.
Good, I'm glad.
There's fun Star Wars stuff coming up in the future. I didn't even know you were getting another job, so that's cool.
Thank you for your job.
I'm at Brooks ZA, so as I said, all things pending, fatherhood stuff for Mac, but if he's available Thursday still, we're going to be recording our last For Your Ears Only James Bond podcast, and then probably we'll be turning our attention for Furious Ears Only, because I'm going to make him watch the Fast and Furious series next.
Nice.
That's the plan.
For Your Ears Only.
Yes. We'll see. We'll see if that might be a ways away. It's hard to schedule with this guy. He's a good father, unlike these fathers that we've had over the last couple movies.
On a podcast with Josh Riggle and Emily, I said, "What's the franchise you know the most about that you've never seen?" And James Bond and Fast and the Furious are probably the two things on my list. I said James Bond during the podcast, but and Furious I've never seen a Fast.
Oh man. If we do Fast and Furious, we're gonna break it up into a couple movies per podcast, and there's some very easy breaking points for that, so you can follow along there. And the James Bond podcast, you can go back and listen to. We did basically one podcast per actor, although we split a couple of them up. And I will say there are a lot of things that are very dated in James Bond movies, but there has been one out of the 22 that I've watched that I didn't like. And even the one I didn't like, there's redeemable things about it, especially as Mac knows everything about James Bond. So he was able to illuminate a lot of stuff about it. And they're very confusing movies at times, but I recommend them. It's a good project. I mean, it's perfect for when you're sitting around. Just the problem is none of them are streaming anywhere, so I had to get them all from the library.
I love how much you plug local libraries.
I know. I should really be sending these podcasts to them or tagging them on Twitter or something. All right. Well, next week we're going to have the time of our lives, because we are going to be talking about Dirty Dancing. So we'll be back, and hopefully you enjoy it. Send in your feedback and Next Movie Connections at Ladder Movie, themovieladder@gmail.com, and we'll see you next week.
I carried a watermelon.
Oh, I totally forgot to plug the It's a Sin bonus podcast.
Ah, dang it. We talked about it at the top.
Everybody, please listen to the It's a Sin bonus podcast that we released last week. The first part is spoiler-free, and then we get into spoilers after 28 minutes with our guest Kyle. And I will see you next week.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear it's a truth, and I owe it all to you.